WBEZ's Nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. When children and teens with developmental disabilities are in high school, they're connected to social activities and resources, and they get prepared to enter the workforce. But when they graduate, many face what's known as a disability cliff. It can take years for grads to find jobs and services.
From the day you find out that your child has a disability, this is like your thought from day one.
Let's think about a student in our K-12 system who we've nurtured as a talented athlete and made sure that they were constantly building skill, only to let them leave at 12th grade and say, your scholarship isn't going to manifest for 5 years.
We checked in with WBEZ Race, Class, and Communities reporter Esther Yoon-Ji Kang about this. She recently did a deep dive into the topic that you can find at WBEZ.org. And in my conversation with Esther, I think she makes it pretty clear that her reporting focuses on people with disabilities who can work, since, as we know, there are some who won't have that option. But all that red tape that parents and these recent grads have to go through to be placed with job programs, it just sounds frustrating. When I spoke with Esther, we started with the story of a recent grad named Carlos Mejia.
Carlos is 23 years old. Mm-hmm. He graduated from Vaughn Occupational High School in May. He has autism and epilepsy. And I met his wonderful family while reporting another story. Former U.S. Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona was in town last year, and Carlos's mom, Maria Mejia, very passionately was describing to the secretary her son's challenges after graduating from high school, that there wasn't anything for him. And so the Mejias are, you know, one of thousands of families in Chicago that are kind of left hanging after school is over.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, Mejia went to a high school for students with disabilities on the Northwest side. Mm-hmm. He told you he loves it. He enjoyed the time that he was at Vaughn Occupational, and he actually misses it. Let's listen.
I feel kind of sad and devastated because I wish Vaughn can go all the way to 30 years old. What I miss about Vaughn is classes, having 4-period lunch, and meeting up with my friends in person and doing bowling club.
So, of course, we're hearing Carlos mention there are a lot of activities and fun social connections. Talk more about the kinds of opportunities that these types of schools and services provide.
Yeah, at school, you know, he was learning life skills on top of the regular education like math and English. He was learning how to navigate using Google Maps. Mm-hmm. He was learning how to take transportation, public transportation around. Some of these schools have mock grocery stores to teach students how to grocery shop. Many have volunteer programs, internship programs where they can actually work, clock in and out, establish sort of daily routines.
And like a sense of independence, it sounds like,
absolutely,
too.
Absolutely, absolutely. So a lot of these skills that the schools are really preparing students with, that's kind of lost after graduating.
Yeah, after graduation, this is the part that surprised me in your story. It all dries up. So talk about this so-called disability cliff.
You're kind of left to figure out what to do on your own, you and your family, your guardian. And so a lot, you know, if not most of these adults, young adults, they sit around at home on their iPad or playing video games. And it's really due to a systems problem and a funding problem there's not a seamless transition where you can say, you know what, this is what I want to do after graduation, or this is what I'm going to do, and someone kind of helps you get there. It's, you've got to call around, you've got to fill out paperwork, you've got to visit doctors, you got to see what you can afford, and very often you can't afford many of these out of pocket.
And what you were just describing there, that sort of planning process, I think it's what a lot of us are used to, that routine where when you become a high school senior, that's when you really start to sit down with like a guidance counselor, for instance, right? And you talk about, here's what I want to do in my future. What's the path to get me there? What are the next steps? So is that type of process just not happening for students like Carlos Mejia?
I think, you know, there are guidance counselors at schools like Vaughn. There are people trying to help folks make a plan. But the issue is not necessarily a matter of plan. I think it's the gap in the funding and the fact that you even have to seek out all these agencies and advocacy groups yourself. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot of work for families, especially, you know, if their households are already having trouble putting food on the table. I mean, that kind of work is like a full-time job, right?
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So advocating for your kid is especially difficult for a lot of families on Chicago South and West sides. And during all of that, your young person is sitting at home waiting. I went to the last day of school at Southside Occupational High School on the South Side last summer, and you know, in June, and I asked the students that were graduating, "What are you going to do tomorrow when school, there's no more school?" And they said, "I'm going to play video games. I'm going to look at my phone, and I'm going to, you know, sit at home and relax." And so that's kind of what happens, but for years on end.
And something else that's happening, Esther, because, you know, you're building up skills while you're in school, right? That's the whole point. But they deteriorate over time if they are not used, right? You talked with Rebecca Clark from the Illinois-based Institute on Public Policy for People with Disabilities. This is her explaining that further.
Let's think about a student in our K-12 system who we've nurtured as a talented athlete and made sure that they were constantly building skill, only to let them leave at 12th grade and say, your scholarship isn't going to manifest for 5 years, and you don't get any coaching or support for those 5 years.
So once people do find jobs or day programs, Esther, it sounds like they got to relearn some skills.
Absolutely. I mean, so much repetition and consistency and routine is needed for a lot of these folks with developmental disabilities. And so it is kind of like starting from scratch. Now, I will mention that not everybody who has developmental disabilities can and should work. Some people, there's just a wide range of ability.
Right.
And so, you know, my story focused on folks that may be able to work and want to, but there's, you know, obviously a spectrum in this population.
For sure. Very good point that, you know, this is not even an option for some people.
Absolutely.
Right?
But however, the same problems are there in terms of funding and systems.
And probably the same type of strain that you were describing earlier that is left on families to kind of figure things out.
Yep, absolutely.
You also talked with Lynn Dancy, whose son Adrian has Down syndrome. I want to play a little bit of what she had to say about the uncertainty of his future starts to weigh on her.
I'm always thinking about his future, like after me. From the day you find out that your child has a disability, this is like your thought from day one.
Why is this happening, Esther? I mean, why are young adults having to wait so long to get connected to services? Well, I mean, surely people know that there's a gap there, no?
They do. It's just the you know, bureaucracy.
People in power, I mean. Yeah.
Right. It's just, you know, there's a bureaucracy issue. There's a lot of systems in place that kind of don't talk to each other. And there's different words for different things and different agencies that you have to contact. Some people have said that they called one place and then they said, call this other person. And then they start right back where they started from. And so there's that. But also it's a funding issue. There's just not enough money to go around. So funding for programs comes from the state budget. And if the state budget doesn't allocate enough money for people with developmental disabilities, for people with disabilities, period,
yeah,
then that funding just won't be there for families.
Where would you say the need is most acute?
Well, you know, as with many issues, certain parts of Chicago have it worse, and the need is greater on the south and west sides because there's also, you know, there's just more students with developmental disabilities in those areas than in other parts of the city. But the interesting thing that we found is that a lot of folks in the city don't even know that they need to be on this list to get funding. And in fact, you know, there are higher numbers of families that are concentrated in the suburbs that right. have signed up for these services already.
So people that you spoke with, Esther, I mean, they want to work. They have the ability, as you pointed out before, to work, and they just want to engage. Here's Lynn Dancy again. This is her talking about her son, Adrian.
He's going to be on time. He's going to do whatever you tell him to do. And he's going to do it to the letter till whatever time you tell him to do it. Because he's really on the clock.
I like hearing her talk about his enthusiasm yes. there. You talked with an employment specialist at Ada S. McKinley as well. That's an organization that works with adults with developmental disabilities. He agreed with what Lynn just said there on that tape. But what did Eric Edquist have to say about retention?
Edquist talks about the high retention rate among programs that his group offers. He also pointed me to, you know, studies that show that there's less turnover among employees, lower absenteeism, higher productivity. And he, you know, he's calling these young people that are sitting at home untapped potential all over Chicago.
Mm. So is this as simple then? Because we got to think of the solution portion of this. Is it as simple as consolidating agencies and nonprofits, getting everyone to talk to each other?
Yeah.
Or is this a more of a political will issue?
I wish it were as simple as that. But, you know, just because of sort of systems that have been in place for decades now, I think it's just sort of entrenched. And I think people need to sort of rethink what it can be. And, you know, the good news is there are some people thinking on this topic right now. There's a task force working on it.
Yeah.
There's also, you know, advocates also say that things have really improved, that the state has indeed increased funding for this issue. And so things have been getting better and there's people in the right seats.
Yeah.
But obviously there's still a lot more that needs to be done.
So are we starting to see then a bit more prioritization, if you will, when it comes to the needs of these grads?
Yeah, the state has definitely brought down the number of years of waiting on lists for funding.
Oh, good.
They've brought it down from like an average of 79 months, that's like 6.5 years,
okay,
to about 56 months between, you know, 4 and 5 years somewhere. And so the years have come down, but that's still
great.
It's still a lot of years.
You're waiting 4 to 5 years for a job?
Yeah.
Or to be placed in a program.
Yep.
Yeah. You wrote a companion piece that laid out some tips for families. One of the first is getting yourself on a list early for what the state calls PUNS. They used to be known as prioritization for urgency of need for services. Walk us through what that would entail, Esther, and where we can find that information online, perhaps.
Yeah, so it's no longer that long name. They just yes. call it the PUNS list. And, you know, the parents and guardians can't just get on it by themselves. So they need to go visit one of 11 independent service coordinators, or ISC, offices in Illinois that help these families. And so there's two of them in Chicago.
Okay.
And so parents have to seek out these offices, and then they go there and then they, you know, conduct interviews, do paperwork and stuff like that, and then they can get on this list. But you do need to get on that list as soon as your child has an IEP at school. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get on it as early as, I think, 2.5 years old. So
very important. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. And before I let you go, you also recommend families get to know advocates and coordinators just to get help navigating all the paperwork that I imagine is part of this process too.
Yeah, not just paperwork, but what I've heard from advocates is the devil's in the details. Some people get on a list and then they find out they did it wrong, and so they have to start all over
again.
And so basically they say if you get hooked up with an advocacy group like the Arc of Illinois, for example, you can get on, sort of get their expertise and get the right information that you need as soon as you can.
We'll leave it there. That's Esther Yunji Kang, who's a reporter on WBEZ's Race, Class, and Communities desk. Now you can find her great story on this at WBEZ.org. Thank you.
Thanks, Sasha.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Alyssa Manthi and Linnea Dominic. It was edited by Dan Tucker and mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset's conversations with local journalists bring you inside their reporting to connect with the news happening in the world around you. To stay connected, hit subscribe to the podcast or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll talk again soon.
I love how WBEZ shows different sides of the story. I never feel like it's too polarized, and I think the reporters do an excellent job of trying to get the full story, trying to show different other sides. I'm often, when I'm listening to public radio, think in my mind, well, what about X? Or like, I have another question. Or like, have they thought about X? And most of the time, WBEZ thinks about all of it, which I really appreciate.